As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Daughter was in a tantrum, going to hang up if I didn't ask about the real wage. Let's go there with a guy who predicted this. He was just outstanding of saying the negative gloom of negative real wages would flip to a positive real wage. Neil Dutta, Renaissance Macro, can you model positive real wages into the end of the year?
I think that's probable, but I think that's largely because inflation's going to be slowing, not because nominal wage growth is going to accelerate. So, I think it's that compositional story is important. My optimism around real wages improving is largely because I'm more confident, I think, relative to consensus, that inflation is cooling throughout the remainder of the year. If you look at what we've seen over the first quarter, obviously it was a very strong quarter for inflation, as we all know. And believe it or not, real wages didn't actually go up all that much, if at all, in Q1. So I think we have to be careful here about kind of tying the firm inflation, because right now, Tom, it feels like to me that people look at the consensus looks at the strong inflation numbers in the first quarter as reinforcing kind of like this inflationary boom-like dynamic in the U.S. economy. But I think when you take a step back, we do know that wage growth has been moderating. Most of the forward-looking indicators that we look at, things like the quits rate, posted wages, suggests further cooling in nominal compensation growth. If you have this sort of inflation continuing, you do need to start worrying a little bit about what that means for real wages, and in turn, what that means for consumer spending and corporate earnings. So, fortunately, I tend to think that inflation will slow, but I don't necessarily look at, the inflation data in the first quarter as kind of reinforcing the stronger growth outlook. I actually think it presents a risk if it continues.
All right. So, Neil, we've had a busy economic release schedule over the last 24 hours with Q1 GDP and then today's inflation. Can you wrap it all up for us in how you think the Fed is going to look at the last 24 hours worth of data?
I think they'll look at it and say we have nothing to do right now. This sort of reinforces their belief that they have the benefit of time. At the end of the day, we have strong jobs growth and firm inflation. That's not a reason for them to cut rates at the moment.
So, all right, so let's kind of look ahead a little bit here. I mean, what is the inflation? I mean, you think inflation is going to kind of moderate here in the back half of the year? If so, where will it moderate? Where will we see it?
Well, I mean, ultimately, I think it starts from the labor market on out, okay. Right? And, I think this sort of bottoms-up approach is interesting, and certainly that's helped people kind of nail the first quarter inflation data. But ultimately, I think you have to stick to first principles. And what I rely on is basically a standard triangle model of inflation. You have embedded inflation or sort of inflation expectations. You have a proxy for aggregate demand, like the unemployment gap. And then you have some kind of cost push measure, right? Like exchange rates, import prices, right. Something like that. So that's the standard triangle model of inflation that my former boss, Ethan Harris, taught me about many, many years ago.
Neil, you're reading my mind. Okay, here's what we're doing. Let me lay out the next 20 minutes. Cam Dawson's waiting. She's having a tantrum. She's not on yet. I mean, we'll get Cam Dawson on the markets. Futures up 42. It's a Cam Dawson market. But we're doing Neil Dutta. Yes, we'll get to the New York Giants. But first, Neil Dutta, right where I wanted to go, was Ethan Harris. Neil Dutta, Dr. Harris wrote a blistering LinkedIn article yesterday saying, would everybody wake up, calm down, and looked at trim mean inflation statistics. Which is your favorite? Ethan Harris, adjusted inflation, Dallas Fed, Cleveland this, whichever. Which is Neil Dutta's favorite inflation statistic?
Well, I mean, Ethan has been harping a lot on the trim mean inflation. I mean, my pushback to that is that there's historically been a much higher, there's an upward bias in a lot of these trim mean measures, trim mean, median PC. They tend to run a lot higher than traditional core measures of inflation. If you go back to 2008, as an example, trim mean inflation was running a lot hotter than traditional core. And could you imagine what would have happened if the Fed was paying more attention to trim mean back then? You know, at any rate, I mean, what I meant to say with the triangle model is that if you go through these components, I mean, inflation expectations after coming down last year, they've kind of stabilized this year.
Yeah.
Unit labor costs are slowing, right? I mean, and the dollar is stronger. So when you talk about slowing unit labor cost growth and firming dollar, how worried should we be about an upside inflation scenario? So I think you have to kind of stick with first principles. And, you know, that's why I think we should, the consensus should at least be open to the prospect of downside inflation surprises over the coming months on a magnitude of the upside surprises we got in Q1.
Neil, one question. The Giants go with a 20-year-old kid from LSU. I think he walks into camp 21 years old. Are these kids too young when they come to the NFL now?
I mean, who am I to say that? I mean, they're great athletes. I don't know. I just hope that, he helps the Giants offense spread out a little bit.
Malik Nabers, LSU.
Yeah.
They went with the fun.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't go with a boring tight end or,
about him,
you know, defensive guard or whatever. They went with something that's going to create some massive energy. Malik Nabers there with the New York Giants.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Cameron Dawson joins now, Chief Investment Officer, New Edge Wealth Management. Cameron, the tech earnings have come in. I guess we've seen a good hunk. How is revenue growth doing? Are we seeing better than good revenue growth in this earnings season?
Yeah, it's still healthy. There has been a moderation, mostly in some of the consumer names, just because inflation has moderated, meaning that you don't have as much pricing power as you've had over the last couple of years. But I think the real story is not just on the revenue line, but it's on the margin line and how much operating leverage these tech companies are getting. It's absolutely incredible. A little bit of cost control and profits absolutely boom. I think you then add on top of that that all of these large cap names are sitting on massive cash piles that the longer that the Fed keeps rates high, the more that they get to keep earning big yields on those cash piles, which just allows them to do things like start dividends and increase buybacks. So clearly for the large cap names, there's a very virtuous cycle.
Sounds like Cam Dawson's taking the Paul Sweeney Kool-Aid here.
The
dividend.
It's not the worst thing in the world to put out a dividend there for your investors. So, Cam, what any takeaways just from earnings so far this season? I mean, we're seeing some pretty strong numbers out of the tech names, and a lot of folks would say tech has to leave this market, so maybe we're in good shape. What are you seeing?
It is encouraging that tech has held up well. We think the real test for tech will really come in the later part of the year and into 2025, because that's when forecasts are for tech earnings growth to decelerate rather meaningfully, and then for the rest of the market to kind of take up the earnings growth and really be the key driver. So if that happens, and it will be something that is very a very high bar for the rest of the market to jump over. For now, tech is very strong, and at 30% of the index for the S&P 500, that remains ultimately the most important sector.
So, I mean, then that kind of goes to the issue, Kim, that a lot of investors, I think, wrestle with, which is, do I stay overweight some of these tech names, or do I try to find some value in other parts of the market, whether that's financials or healthcare or energy? How do you think about that at this stage?
Yeah, I mean, that's the real push-pull, because tech has the earnings growth and the stock momentum, but it's extraordinarily crowded. If you look at sector flows, tech is the only sector that has had meaningful inflows at $70 billion using the Deutsche Bank data. And it's also really expensive. But on the other hand, if you look at the value sectors, they're underloved, underowned, very cheap in some areas. However, they don't have that earnings momentum.
Yeah.
But they have seen their stock prices pick up, which is encouraging.
Okay, I have a toothpaste coming. I'm going to name which one it is. But Kim, you go to the heart of the matter, which is you look at the FA screen of a traditional, boring, wonderful, all-American value company. They don't have the revenue pop. Can you predict in the next 24 months, a la what Zuckerberg wrought, that we're going to see a new rationalization of Jack Welch-like cost-cutting across all sectors?
I used to cover GE, so I'm not necessarily going to laud the era of the Welch time and kind of the aftermath of that, because cost-cutting, you can't cut your way to growth. I think the reality is, and this is how we always focus our investments, which is ones on high return on invested capital. So we want to focus on companies that for every dollar that they put into their business, they get more dollars out than the average bear. And so what that leads to is that you do find a lot of that within tech names. But there are also places within the industrials, within even some materials.
Okay, give me an example. Come on, give me. It's not an average bear. It's an average ninja turtle. Give me an example, Cam Dawson, of a value company doing our return on ROIC, doing ROIC in a nice way.
Yeah. So some of the names within the industrials that we do like are in the services side of things. I can't give you any specific names, I'm sorry. And I don't even have any turtles with me today. But if you look at some of the services names that mask as industrials, they do a lot of things like insurance data and that type thing. They're really good in defensive or choppy markets and don't have that same kind of sensitivity to underlying GDP, where you have to see an absolutely booming economy just for them to make a little bit of money.
So I guess let's just take a look at this economic data we saw in the last 24 hours. Cam, what's your takeaway here as it relates to maybe how the Federal Reserve will kind of act over the next several months? Did you learn anything over the last 24 hours as it relates to our GDP, our inflation picture?
Yeah, I think it's ditto to what Dutta said, which is that this data doesn't necessarily mean that the Fed has to do anything at this time. We think that the bar for rate hikes from here is much, much higher than the bar for rate cuts. It just means that it won't take a lot of easing in economic data for the Fed to start putting that cut talk back on the table, whereas you'd have to see a significant acceleration in inflation for the Fed to start raising rates further. But we do think that the Fed is going to keep rates as they are for some time,
right?
Because the data today simply doesn't support any urgency for them to start cutting. Okay.
One quick question, then we got to go to another area with you, Cam Dawson. What's your SPX call 12 months forward?
We think that the returns are going to be closer to average, given this starting point, and what average is high single digits.
Okay.
And this starting point is one where you have allocations to equities that are not at peak levels but are extended, okay. valuations that aren't at peak levels but are extended, okay. which just supports that that kind of double digit, better than average returns that right. we've had in different years is going to be quite hard to achieve.
Like most people that really kill its strategy, it started out with individual security analysis. Cam Dawson, I still don't get GE Aerospace out of Cincinnati. That's un-American. But Cam Dawson, Lawrence Culp shows up, and he's a Danaher and all that. He's popped. Are you ready, Cam? 19.3% per year since he walked in the door. Lawrence Culp, the pieces he picked up, it's really something what he's done.
Lean manufacturing is a beautiful thing. It's fantastic. The ability to be able to take costs out of a business without cutting to the bone and really focusing on the kinds of businesses that can generate a great deal of upside. We've seen that with some companies like an IDEX or an ITW that use the 80-20 approach. And the thing about those kinds of names is that it gets you back to those high return on invested capital. Find companies that for every dollar that they put into their business,
right.
they get a greater return.
Cam Dawson, thank you so much with New Edge. Really love it. That was really, really excellent. I got like a 3-hour conversation here right now with Mandeep Singh, and Paul's got to do a victory lap here on the dividend. Mandeep, finally, I mean, I don't even know what with the puny dividend they're doing, what the dividend payout ratio is, but are finally the tech boys going to grow up and give us a dividend, and critically, give us a dividend growth that somewhat correlates with their revenue growth?
Yeah, and look, I think Google and Amazon were the two out of the Mag 6 that didn't
the
have...
The two children.
Yes, yeah. So it puts pressure on Amazon now to announce a dividend.
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah.
And they're like lemmings off a cliff, Paul. You've been through this. I mean, Apple's got to one-up them and, you know, do a 100 billion share buyback,
right.
whatever.
So, I mean, I'm looking at Google / Facebook, you know, $80 billion in free cash flow, $70 billion they announced this yeah. buyback, so that's huge.
Yeah.
Talk to us about the quarter, though. What did you see in the operations of the quarter? What stood out for you? Because the market really likes what it saw.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone thought their search business is getting disrupted. They slow down in terms of growth rates. They come out and really blew it out of the park on the search profitability. I mean, that was the driver of why the operating margin was 32%, all-time high.
Wow.
And that just goes to show how much pricing power this company has. They can raise the ad auction prices without telling advertisers, and everyone will pay for it. Because that's how their ROI is on ad spend. So clearly, you know, they're flexing their muscle when it comes to ad pricing. And YouTube and Cloud being a $100 billion run rate business combined, growing at over 25%,
That's Tom. He's been calling out YouTube for a while here. I'm not sure the street. Do you think the street fully appreciates YouTube?
No, they do not. I'll editorialize you.
Can I spin that out?
There was a dislocation in the valuation that Google had versus relative to Microsoft. Microsoft trading at 33 times PE versus Google at 23. Why?
Okay, the basic idea here is Apple peels off services. Dan Ives says, no, they'll never do it. I don't know what that's worth. But Google could peel off or be forced to peel off YouTube,
yeah.
and it's ginormous. Is that the right, you know, CFA term?
Yeah. I mean, their YouTube ad revenue grew 21%. The subscription revenue is also north of 20%.
So that's because of Bloomberg surveillance out on YouTube search. Bloomberg podcast continue.
And engagement is off the roof. So I agree. I think
yes,
YouTube
it
itself could be $1 trillion in market cap, given its growth rate.
So that puts Google, you'd model out at what, $3 trillion with a proper valuation?
I think so. Based on the numbers you saw last night.
Are they listening to Ruth? Come on. For New York City, there's a whole history here, folks. I believe it's Morgan Stanley. The brain freezes on a Friday. Ruth Porat's a CFO out there. Are they finally, the owners, the CEO, are they finally listening to Ruth?
I think so. I mean, she has additional responsibility now, you know, in terms, and they are looking for a new CFO, given she has additional responsibility. But
I'm going to give Paul Sweeney a massive victory lap on this one. So I'm going to put it up again. I just put it out on social. This is the new world. This is the Sweeney world. Daniel Paris, pay a dividend.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have to be like Total Europe or BNP Paribas. Right, exactly. Pay something.
So, Mandeep, I still view AI as a threat to the core search business of Google. Is that a valid concern, do you think?
I mean, look, I could say the same about the cloud business for Microsoft. Yes, there is more competition, but in search, they are the incumbent player. And what they're showing right now is they can integrate their generative AI stuff with their cloud, with their search, and that actually is helping the business, the pricing power of the business.
You're right. Yep. So.
Take what you learned here, I mean, from Texas Instruments over to Meta, Facebook, over to the two yesterday, bring it over to Apple, I believe it's on Tuesday.
Well, so Apple, I think, has a different problem when it comes to the China side of the business, the 20% revenue exposure. You can't do anything about that handset revenue exposure they have. And the services side of the business is not going to look as good as, you know, Microsoft and Google.
Does it threaten their margins?
It does. I mean, look, they have been in the antitrust crosshairs, even though, you know, not much will happen in the near term, but the fact that they can't, you know, keep their take rates at 30% that they used to have in the App Store, that's going to hurt the business. And they can't roll out new Gen AI services because they don't have the infrastructure. I mean, all these companies are raising CapEx 30, 40, 50%. Apple doesn't spend as much on their data centers. And that's where I think they will be sort of they're behind, and it will be very hard for them to catch up in terms of, you know, the generative AI stuff, which is what the growth part of the
but
business
Paul,
is.
But, Paul, do they need generative AI? That's what I don't get.
Well, that's my question. I think they kind of do. So I was looking forward to this May 7th. I guess they have their big event coming up.
iPads.
Yeah. So
Lisa's buying three.
What are we going to do? Are they going to have a, I guess, transformative announcement, do you think?
They will innovate with their chips. The biggest advantage that Apple has is it controls its chips in their devices. Okay. And that's where the on-device generative AI play is still there. No one else can take the distribution away from them. They control the distribution. And if they're able to show something like that, that will drive a heavy refresh cycle. But in the end, this company is still driven by iPhone refreshes and iMac refreshes and all those,
I had a fan stop me in the street and they said, is it true that Mandeep and Anurag can't be in the same building at the same time? Is that true?
It's in a contract.
Like, have you ever two ever talked to each other?
We get along very well.
But you can't be in the same building at the same time.
No, it's kind of like key man risk.
Okay.
We can't do it with our technology. Right?
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Your daily look at the front pages. Lisa, what do you have?
All right. College students, this is in the Times, are becoming reservation scalpers. It's a new side hustle that they're thought of.
What?
Because, you know, in New York City, people are always wanting to get reservations to these high-end restaurants you can't get in. So what these students are doing is they're making reservations. They're posting them on this platform called Appointment Trader. That's a platform where people bid on reservations. So they're booking these reservations. There's one college student in Rhode Island who booked a reservation for a French restaurant in Soho. He made $855 just from someone who wanted to get in there. He made $1,000 from a reservation at Carbone because someone wanted to get in there.
Really?
He said he made $70,000 a year on this side hustle. New Yorkers don't like it. They say it's ruining the restaurant industry because, you know, we're New Yorkers. We want to get into different, you know, places, and we can't because these kids are buying up all the reservations. They're not even going. They're just making money off of it.
So what happened to the days when you just walk in and slide the person at the counter $20 and say, you know, just come on out?
Exactly. You go into Carbo. They go, oh my God, it's you. I'm flattered. And you go up the stairs to the back little bar in the back.
Look at you.
And you sit on a little chair and your children are like, this is so cool. And there's the bar right there with the mirror.
Okay.
And you don't, you know, you give them $50 or whatever.
Call it a day.
And now it's $800?
Sometimes $1,000. Justin Bieber couldn't even get into Carbone.
It's just ridiculous.
So, yeah, and the restaurants don't like it because if those reservations aren't sold, then they're stuck with empty tables. And that's when they just lose out that way.
Yeah, I've not been there, so I'll defer to Tom.
Restaurant scalpers.
Yes. Smith and Walensky's last night. Oh, New York Strip, top.
Over on Third Avenue?
Yep, fantastic. Packed.
You are so old school.
Oh, this is my investment banking team from 1986. We still get together.
My God. Yeah. They let you bring in the drips and the catheters and the walkers.
Exactly.
Did you have to pay for that reservation? Right. Or
We know some people.
We're mentioning restaurants. Afterthought had a birthday. Where do you want to go? She goes, the Mermaid. So there's a new Mermaid down in Soho. It's the first time I've been below 59th Street in eight months. You know?
Nice.
I texted Pharaoh. I said, come on over. I'm at the Mermaid. And he was in Capri or something.
Yeah, of course, exactly.
What do you got?
Brushed you off. Another thing in New Yorkers that they always talk about, you know, is congestion pricing. This one is the illegal weed shops. That's another issue in New York City.
I've heard this.
Turns out, this is from the New York Times. An illegal shop in Queens is called Bodega. Just received a permit. And this is kind of a backtrack because New York said they were cracking down on these illegal weed shops and not going to give them permits because they weren't going about it the legal way. But now the New York Times is saying, hey, this shop is starting to do it. The State Office of Cannabis Management, there is such a thing. It said that it's investigating whether the owners, because they applied for it under a different name. So that might be an issue, and that's why they may have gotten up there. But it's still under review.
Right.
But this is just a big issue.
New York City has screwed this up terribly. Every single block has the illegal weed shops.
People are bitter.
And where's the tax revenue? I mean, you talk to people in the cannabis industry, and they say New York City is the absolute worst execution of this law seen anywhere.
My basic take is it's Boulder, Colorado.
Yep.
Yeah.
Spring of 1971, and the music isn't as good. And you know, it's out of control. I mean, that's what I hear from particularly downtown.
Well, I hear that from Matt Miller. I mean, he's my go-to guy on
This is a problem. He's in one of the suburbs north of the city. Yes. It's a big problem.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
So anyway, all right. Well,
next.
All right. What's also out of control? Tipping. Tipflation.
Oh, okay. Get me going.
There's a study. It's from Tucker Research. This is what's in the New York Post. Your favorite, Paul.
Yep.
Americans spend nearly $500 a year tipping more than they'd like to because they're saying they feel a lot of pressure. You know, you're at the Starbucks or whatever. The barista turns a little, tablet around and they're staring at you as you pick 10%, 15%, 20% or nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the pressure. I am now, this is one of my New Year's resolutions, just starting today.
Okay.
If I didn't do it 5 years ago, I'm not doing it today.
Well, that's another one of the points. Yeah.
Because I'm a good tipper. You ask any of the folks down the Jersey Shore saloons, they know I'm a good tipper. But I'm not.
Now, Tucker, on the other hand.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But that's a problem. People are saying they're tipping now for things that they never tipped before.
There's a good thing. I saw on social media.
And I get stares. I get stares.
You get stares?
I get nasty looks.
A good thing on social media I saw yesterday was somebody was going through TSA. They were going through, and the person was going through their TSA. Tearing apart the thing. And then afterwards, they put their phone next to them for the tip, you know? So.
Are you done or do you have one more jewel?
No. Okay, your coffee, your latte could be getting more expensive. Here's the reason why. There's a drought in Vietnam. Yes, hurting coffee bean production. We're talking about Robusta futures. Hit a 16-year high on Wednesday. Here's the issue that I thought was interesting. Hoarding. Vietnamese farmers, they're holding on to the beans. They're holding on to as much as 13% of this year's harvest. They're hoping to sell them for higher prices.
Good trade.
So that's becoming the issue there. So experts saying, it could take a while before it reaches consumers. So your mocha is safe for now, but it could start to tick up.
Tom, we have a ticker on that on the Bloomberg Terminal, CCN4 space commodity, cocoa futures. Again, it's just been this chart has gone up and to the right like crazy. Spike in cocoa prices. Go figure. I mean, that's commodity inflation that hits your pocketbook.
Lisa, thank you so much. Greatly, greatly, greatly appreciate it this morning. The tipping thing is a huge deal because, in Paris, it's totally different where they get a huge wage. And here they don't.
Right. Right.
And London is really messed up where there's no tipping. London's the worst.
So you don't tip in London?
You don't tip in London.
You cannot. If you don't leave cash, they don't get tipped. It's terrible. It's a complete scam in London.
It's part of the culture. I mean, you know.
But they get paid more than.
They do get paid more, but you can't add a tip off your card.
You don't even get that option.
I sat down with Reto, keeper of the Amex, and we spent an hour on this. That was a joke. Lisa, that was brilliant. Very valuable, actually.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.